Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the sports desk of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal and RedRaiders.com, here's your look at all things Texas Tech sports. Now, here's the Red Raider Podcast.
And hello, everyone. I'm Carlos Lubb from the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, bringing you another edition of the Red Raider Podcast. As we always do on Monday, got some other people to chat with me about a rare Texas Tech victory this year. So in that note, we've got David Collier from KMAC, sports director, Red Raider Nation. You can watch him on TV as always. And then, of course, Ryan King, KLBK sports director, covers high school, saw him at Trinity Christian last week. And guys, before we kind of start anything, it's a little chilly today. I'm not sure what the weather will be on Halloween, but certainly will be a little bit of a factor going into that game, I would think, from both of you in terms of how cold it'll be outside.
Well, we don't have to worry about it as much since we're stuck up in that press box with you most of the time. Now, I will say this. I've got to go down and do scores, and I'll be bundled up and have my face covered like I have to now with the mask and everything. But yeah, it could be a deal, but I think Ryan will agree with me. It gets just as cold up in Norman, Oklahoma as it does in Lubbock, Texas.
Yeah, it's today. I'm glad the game's not today. I'll tell you that, because that would be, my goodness, that would not be fun. I will actually be in the stands for this game since we're only getting generally two credentials. So Phil will be there along with Collier. I'll be out there with the rest of us normies just in the stands.
The smart ones.
So I'll get to see Collier, you know, do his thing live. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It'll be cool. It won't be like this. I mean, hopefully it won't be like this. But yeah,
I'm not a meteorologist, but I think it's supposed to be in the 70s as a high. So I'm sure we'll be dealing with 50 once we're out there in the dark.
No ice. Yeah. But I'll say, yeah, I think it'll impact the teams, but I think it'll impact them equally. Cause neither one is used to I think they're used to, you know, similar seasons, I guess.
Well, speaking of seasons, Texas Tech got a big victory over West Virginia last weekend, 34-27. We'll get a little bit into that, and then we'll talk, of course, about Oklahoma, who both of you all know and love because of being from Oklahoma and kind of dealing with those deals. But looking at some things, kind of watching the game, obviously you guys have done that, I've done that. There were three things that stood out to me, and we can kind of expand on those. But if you guys have anything else, feel free. But the biggest thing I know everyone's going to look at is, oh, we have a new quarterback, that being Henry Columbia. I thought he was very effective. I believe he was 22 of 28 throwing. 167 yards, I believe, is what he threw for. Certainly not the numbers you would expect. 169, if I'm not mistaken, pardon me. It wasn't the 347 that Jared Dagey threw for, but it was enough to get you a win because he also threw a touchdown pass, big touchdown pass. And not only that, but you had asked Matt Wells this morning, Ryan, during a Zoom, that not only did he do that, but he made some really, really big completions on third and fourth down that extended some drives, obviously kept the defense off the field. But I think more importantly, I think everyone – really saw what Henry Columbia can bring to the table. Not necessarily maybe that dual threat ability that everyone thinks, oh, he's got game-breaking speed. He doesn't have game-breaking speed, but he has, as Don so eloquently put, enough to make a defensive coordinator groan, which is he will get those 13 to 12 to 14-yard gains if you're not accounting for him during some pass protection. And he did that a couple times there. But I guess from your perspective, Ryan, what did you like seeing from Henry Columbia? What did you kind of see that maybe surprised you from him last weekend?
A couple things. One was what you mentioned right there. And I think it says just as much, if not more, about Eric Izukama. But a couple third down conversions to Miles Price and Eric Izukama got them the first touchdown. And that 4th-and-11 later in the game, I thought that was one of the biggest plays. I couldn't believe they were going for it personally. That was a pretty bold play. And then it's not like the play was a gimme. It was a great throw, great catch. But also Columbia, this wasn't surprising. Multiple times he was tucking the ball and getting not just like a couple yards. Like he was looking like almost a true dual threat guy. So he stayed cool under pressure throughout a game that was tight. It's not like this game was, you know, Tech was running away with this game the whole way or something. But, yeah, how he looked in pressure moments, whether it was 3rd and 4th downs or late in the game when they needed him, the lack of turnovers on his case, all those things are honestly what we were talking about these last couple of weeks, why he got the start. I think he showed I really do think if you look back at this game, there's about 4 or 5 different things you can look at that he did positively. They're like, this is why he got the starting job. And he lived up to it with doing the exact things we thought he could do.
David, along those lines, he started 7 for 7 passing. Obviously, he got a huge start in terms of just positive momentum because the defense got its first 3 and out on a first possession of an opposing team this year. From your perspective, what did you see from Henry Columbia? And I guess, is it anything different than what Ryan, kind of saw? Or was there something that really kind of stood out to you?
No, yeah, the poise more than anything. I mean, yeah, he got sacked a couple times, but I think the one thing that might come out of this whole thing is the fact that he mentioned it there, you know, that defensive coordinators or Matt Wells did, you know, they have something else to prepare for. He's not going to bust a, you know, 35-yard run or he's going to kill you with his speed, but just the doubt that, you know, he might take off running or there might be a designed run because there were designed runs a handful of times. And that's going to, you know, maybe slow a defensive line down a little bit, just like it did against West Virginia and just like it potentially could against an Oklahoma defense that, I think they have 15 sacks heading into this one, 2nd in the Big 12 conference in sacks. So just something else for defensive coordinators to have to deal with. And yeah, I mean, it goes back to what we've talked about from the get-go. He seems more decisive. I mean, that throw on 4th down, it was there was no doubt, you know, where, I mean, it just, he was impressive. I mean, I mentioned it Saturday night, it wasn't flashy, but, and the team ran for more yards than they passed. You look at these numbers and I think maybe we should be talking about the defense a little bit more. It's not like the offense just like filled up the stat sheet, but they made the most of the yards that they did get in that contest against the Mountaineers.
Well, since you kind of mentioned it, David, let's go into it because I thought that was something else that really impressed me. I know the first play where they got the 3 and out on West Virginia was big for the defense, not necessarily just for a confidence standpoint, but just to let the offense know that their defense was not just going to put them in a 7-0 hole, so to speak. I think that was really big for the offense. And not only that, but I know that a lot has been made about giving up big plays. They gave up 2 big plays. To West Virginia, 15 plus yards, or more. I thought it was kind of tough, but I think that the one thing that you have to look at with the defense is now you can use the quote unquote term of they're not breaking. Yeah, they are giving up big plays, but they're not giving up big scoring plays, I guess, if that's the way you want to kind of term it. And I apologize, it was 7 big plays. I can't read my own writing here. So it was 7 big passing plays and 1 big rushing play, the 14 yarder by Letty Brown. That was the touchdown and the 7 big plays on the passing plays, the 34 yarder to Michael Laughlin. He had a 38 yarder to Winston Wright, who seemed to be the target of choice for Diggy throughout the game. But in terms of the defense, I know you spoke about it, David, but I think the one that everyone's going to remember is the one where they got to the football, ran, pursued, swarmed, got to, I believe it was Sam James, the wide receiver for West Virginia. And when you thought that Texas Tech was in a really tough spot, you see Henry Columbia, as well as he played, he was walking to the sideline because they got a 3 and out. Austin McNamara caught a little bit of wind on a punt, even though he had an 87 yarder that everyone remembers. He had a 31 yarder. That kind of put West Virginia in some really, really good field position. But then I want to say it was 1 or 2 plays in, the defense comes up with the strip, fumble, recovery. Zach McPherson runs at 56 yards, touchdown. And that was really, I think, the game-changing play because not only did they make that play, but then they kind of closed it out, David.
Yeah, and Matt Wells mentioned this, and I think that's the biggest thing that comes away from this. You know, when you have success like this in pressure-packed situations, I think they can build on that, especially in the college game. But, I mean, to go punt, force fumble, punt, and then to get that stop in the end zone at the very end, in a tight ball game, it's something they haven't done. I mean, this hasn't happened. You know, he mentioned it there. This is their first win in a one-score game.
Yep.
In Big 12 play. He was 0-for-4 last year in that. He obviously lost to Texas when the way that one went earlier this year. I think that this can do wonders for that defense who, you know, stepped up when they had to. I think that was the biggest thing for me, just the way that they finished this ball game. Because, like we said, it's not like there was a bunch of offense, not a lot of touchdowns there in the second half. It, to be honest with you, it was very bland. And I was texting with somebody whenever that strip sack happened. They texted me, man, this has gotten kind of boring. You know, defensive football, I guess, you know, that's the way it is for everybody these days. And the second they strip the football, voila, defense makes it exciting, right? That was a huge moment in the ball game, and the defense had to step up because the offense is not necessarily doing as much as we've come accustomed to. But I think that's huge moving forward for Keith Patterson's bunch.
Ryan, kind of speaking to that, I know we'll talk a little bit more about the defense and if you have any other thoughts, but I think the other thing too is that you just have to really give credit to this Texas Tech football team, which was playing with a lot of its playmakers on the offensive side. You look at some of the guys that Don had mentioned were out, TJ Vasher, Kashawn Carter, Dalton Rigdons, Roderick Thompson, who got injured during the game, Xavier White, who got injured, Jarius Townsend, who wasn't available. And when you look at Kashawn Carter, Dalton Rigdon, that's basically most of your H wide receivers. So you're looking at Miles Price starting. You had Jalen Polk starting. You had Loke Fungi playing some time in there. And then he even mentioned Caleb Rogers on the offensive line at times there. If I'm not mistaken, you guys can correct me, but I believe he said at times on the field there were about six freshmen, depending on when they snapped the ball later on in that game. So, Ryan, I guess to your point, when you asked him, with kind of the future is now type deal with the freshmen, how important was it for them to not only get a victory from the defense, so to speak, because I think that's an interesting point that David brings up. Yes, it may have been a boring game, but this is maybe a game that Texas Tech doesn't win maybe several years ago. This is a game where maybe this team is starting to learn that new mentality of what Matt Wells has been talking about, play good defense, win an ugly game, and obviously play next week.
It was pretty interesting to see that whenever Coach Wells was asked about guys stepping up and being like leaders and this is what they need to see, he listed off like 15 different guys because he clearly couldn't narrow it down to just a couple of them. But you're exactly right, Carlos. It felt like so many guys were stepping up when they needed them to, especially with when we saw that tweet right before the game. It was like, my goodness, they have like 8+ guys out. Like there's so many, which you could say was a lack of talent with the amount of guys that were going to be off the field. And the amount of guys you got to see on, especially with the defense, I mean, other than maybe, you said like the 7 big plays, and it honestly didn't even feel like that many. It felt like the defense was not letting West Virginia just go down the field on them, even when the offense didn't put them in, you know, like the offense fumbles the ball, they give them a short field right there.
Yeah, they were definitely spread out for sure. I think that's the one thing is typically you would see it multiple back-to-back possessions. You kind of allow some big plays, and then obviously it's out there. But those 7 were spread out for sure.
And I love something I've always loved to see when you talk about tempo offense and fast pace and all that stuff, keep the defense on their toes. What hardly ever gets talked about is the toll that takes on your own defense, how tired they can get, and how Matt Wells was really acknowledging that, we in this game specifically, and when you're looking at West Virginia and Oklahoma and really the entire Big 12, but specifically those two teams, how much you have to avoid those 3-and-outs, how much you have to avoid getting your defense out there over and over and over and over. Because even a great defense, if you put them out there just over and over, they've talked about with analytics-wise, if you want to go down that path, the more shots you get as an offense, eventually you're going to break through. Eventually you're going to do something, which vice versa. The more plays your defense is going against, eventually they're going to give up those bigger plays. So the offense having those sustained drives did help out the defense. But, yes, I agree with you, Carlos. The amount of guys you saw stepping up, whether they were veterans or young guys, I think helps Texas Tech out now and for the future. Because I don't know if I totally say the future is now, because there's still plenty of, you know, veteran-type guys on this team that are making plays like a Rico Jeffers. But it was impressive to see how it really felt like a total complete game between the offense was clicking more than it has most of the year, and the defense was not allowing a team that was putting up pretty good numbers throughout the year. They weren't – you're right. It wasn't just like, oh, 20-yard pass, 15-yard run, 25-yard touchdown. It was – they're more spread out throughout the game. They were able to, you know, after a big play, come back and not let them just string them together.
And I don't want to sound dumb when I say this, but – it also helps to be kind of young and dumb in these situations too.
That's fair too. Freshmen,
you throw these freshmen in there, and I know the offense didn't really do a lot late, but you mentioned like 6-7 freshmen out there on the offensive side of the ball. They don't know about previous failures in pressure pack situations. And I think something can be said to that in that situation as well.
Well, the other thing too is you had brought it up to Matt Wells, that big 4th-and-11 conversion to Eric Hizikonma. He's your second leading receiver. Your first leading receiver is Miles Price, 7 catches for 79 yards. And then not only that, Taj Brooks, your second leading rusher. It just goes to show again, I know it'll probably be talked and it'll be some other things that'll be said, but the fact that the recruiting has been so well for Matt Wells and company, yes, it's only been a couple so far, or one if you want to really kind of be specific about it, but guys that they targeted and felt like they could make an instant impact have really been the guys that have kind of stepped in. And I know Eric Kelly, as much as I make fun of him for asking questions, made a really good point. You look at what happened on that last play that made the game changing play. You had a transfer from Arizona, a transfer from Penn State picking up the fumble and scoring the touchdown, and then you had another transfer that I can't remember the name right now. It was Morgan Stern. Someone else. I cannot remember the other guy right now.
Morgan Stern.
There you go, Morgan Stern from Duke. They were all on that play, and then when you look at your starting quarterback, he was a transfer from Utah State. So not only have they recruited well, but they've been able to find transfers that have kind of filled in a void very nicely here for Texas Tech. And at least, again, I'm not saying that this is going to be like gangbusters or something, but they have found the correct fit right now for what they need. And I think if they're able to kind of keep that momentum going, you've got a very, very – I don't want to be that guy, but a very favorable schedule once you get past Oklahoma in terms of doing some special things, because I know we've talked about it, but a winless team could potentially be bowl eligible if need be with these crazy times. But certainly if you look at Texas Tech's football schedule after Oklahoma, you've got a game. Again, I hate to look ahead, but at TCU, you got Baylor, Oklahoma State, who Texas Tech has had their number for. And then you look at Kansas, where I would like to think that Kansas is going to probably be one of those where, yes, you do game plan for them, but well, what do you really have to game plan for when Puka is not going to play for them? So I certainly think there's a little bit of momentum. I know it's tough to see that you've got those two games against Kansas State and Texas where you feel like that those should have been victories because you held the lead in the fourth quarter, but I think there's a lot to be said to close out on that. So on that note, fellas, you got any other comments before we move on to Oklahoma?
No, I mean, honestly, I think we covered a lot of what was what worked for Tech in that game.
I certainly agree with that. So let's try and get this done because I know I've got a Zoom coordinator deal in a little bit. But Oklahoma, Ryan, I know we've talked a lot about Spencer Rattler, not necessarily your typical Oklahoma quarterback where he transfers as a senior and Lincoln Riley kind of coaches him up for that 1 year and he gets a Heisman. He's a guy that was recruited by Lincoln Riley. He's now earned the starting job. He's lost the quarterback position, I guess, if you want to call it that, for a little bit due to throwing some interceptions, I believe, against Texas. And then you saw Tanner Mordecai come in for a little bit. But at least as of right now, it seems like it's the Spencer Rattler show. What can you tell us about Mr. Rattler and what he's able to do? Because Matt Wells was very complimentary about the arm talent.
And try to give pros and cons. The pros are coming out of high school, this guy was – there's a reason he was the number one quarterback. I mean, he has a lot of these – I feel like there's this misconception. I don't know if this is with OU fans or this is with everybody. People think this guy's a dual threat. He's really not. This guy is a pro-style guy that – he can run, I guess, as much as, you know, any quarterback in 2020 can, but you would not classify him as a dual threat. He is more of an in-the-pocket guy. In high school, he looked very accurate. He has a surprisingly strong arm for his smaller frame. some of the cons that, you know, you can go on and on about the pros, like that system fits him. He likes to, you know, pass it around. He does like to chunk it deep. Some of the cons would be because he likes to chunk it deep, he's not always super accurate. He is susceptible to throwing interceptions, forcing a ball that shouldn't be there, or just, you know, going for the bombs over and over when maybe you can take a shorter pass or even a check down. He has had some of those mistakes like any freshman does, but I think the number one thing Tech can look at is watching these OU games. Spencer Rattler gets happy feet a little bit whenever he gets pressured in a game. If someone gets up on him, he can quickly he very much gets the happy feet, and he sees his first, maybe his second progression, and then he's trying to run, which in high school, that works out. He's probably a better athlete than everyone he's going against. In college, as good as he is not a better athlete than everyone on the defense that he's going against. So if you can get pressure on him, and OU's O-line has gotten better throughout the year, or the first couple games they were very susceptible. They have gotten a little bit better, but they're still not at the standards that OU offensive lines have been. So I think that's really where if you can get pressure on him, not only will he look to run, he's going to rush his progressions. That's when he might force something in there, and Tech can get those turnovers. And if you remember 2 years ago when they came here, they got two interceptions on Kyler Murray right to start the game. They're up 14-0. Yeah. I think that is even more possible with a guy like Spencer Rattler, as talented as he is. There are definitely ways to rattle him, which OU hasn't had because they had Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, all experienced guys that you aren't going to rattle easily. I think Spencer Rattler, as talented as he is a lot more susceptible to being rattled in a game than those guys were.
Well, and maybe one of the reasons, and you might agree with me here, Ryan, is that he gets rattled a little more is he doesn't have the weapons, mm-mm, or at least the named weapons that we've become accustomed to knowing from Oklahoma, whether it's a running back or a guy like CeeDee Lamb. I think that's one of the issues too. You've got a freshman quarterback, you know, in Rattler out there, and he's throwing to Marvin Mims or Austin Stogner, you know, a fullback / tight end type guy. I mean, he's more of a tight end, but there's not the explosive talent that we're used to. I say that with Mims. Maybe we just don't know him as well as we do the others, but the running game certainly isn't something you're going to – in that game a couple of years ago when Kyler Murray threw a couple early interceptions, you're like, well, just start handing the ball off, and Oklahoma eventually started running the ball down the Texas Tech defense's throat. I don't think you necessarily have a guy that can do that this time around. It might be the weapons around him aren't what we've been accustomed to seeing from an Oklahoma offense.
And going off what Collier's saying there, he is exactly right. I mean, there's no CeeDee Lamb who's – he was as good as anyone in the country last year. But yet, their number one running back, Kenny Brooks, he opts out for the season. The number one receiver was supposed to be Charleston Rambo, who, if anyone's watched Oklahoma, is not a number one wide receiver. And, I mean, you're right. Yeah, Marvin Mims does look really good, but he's still a freshman. I mean, there's still going to be a limit on what he can do. So when your best two options are a freshman quarterback throwing to a freshman receiver with a backup running back and a tight end – in his second year, no, that doesn't have the same. And an offensive line that's not as good in years past. You can see where OU has taken a step back. I don't think it's – I feel like Rattler does get a lot of the blame because that's how, you know, quarterbacks get the blame. Yeah. That's how it works. But you're exactly right. Like, it's not really a mystery why this OU team is not what they've been in recent years. Yet it's kind of across the board on the offense where they're lacking in previous seasons, which does allow for a Tech defense to have – I'm not going to say an advantage, but – a much better chance than they've had in the last 3 or 4 years.
Certainly a interesting matchup for Texas Tech. Obviously Oklahoma got a big victory over the weekend over TCU, a team that I guess is kind of on the down low right now in terms of what Gary Patterson has been able to do with those guys. But the thing is, and it's kind of interesting just because of these crazy times. I know parity is a word that's really thrown out with college basketball a lot, but it seems like football is having that a lot, especially when you look at Indiana getting a big win over Penn State over the weekend. I mean, I'm not saying it could happen, but I'm saying there's a chance, to quote a Dumb and Dumber movie there, going into this weekend, because as Brian and David just pointed out, Oklahoma's missing a lot of star players that you would normally be thinking okay, you've got this guy to cover, you got this guy to cover. Not to say that they're not talented. They are very talented. They earned what they have. But I think it's not those, as Ryan mentioned, veteran-type players that have been in the system for a couple years, or a guy that is a veteran quarterback coming into a situation where he just has to learn a scheme and knows that he has some go-to guys, whether that be a tight end, whether that be a star wide receiver that's now in the NFL, or even when you look at the wide receivers, know that you've got one, two, three, or four guys that you can throw to. It's not necessarily two guys, and then all of a sudden you're trying to scramble yourself and try and find someone. So I think there's certainly some interesting situation for Texas Tech to take advantage of. But I think the one other important thing is that Texas Tech now has some confidence going into this contest. I think there's something to be said about the defense, knowing that it can close out a victory. I know there's a lot made about Texas Tech being a team that can score a bunch of points over the last several years. Yes, that's good. But if you can't stop the other opponent from scoring, that's how you did lose those 70 to 60 games. Obviously, I'm making up those numbers, but the point remains that you can score as many points as you want, but if you can't stop the other team, you're going to lose more than you win. And I think that was fleshed out a little bit over the last several years. And I think, again, I brought this up earlier with you guys, but I know it's a little bit more nerve-wracking and annoying for a fan base to watch a team lose by a possession or so. But I think it goes to show how close that this coaching staff and this team are to achieving something that they are looking to do, which obviously at the end of what the goal is obviously Big 12 championship. They're probably not there at this point, but I think the fact that they are a competent team that can move the football now, they've got a quarterback that they've got confidence in, the team has a quarterback that they have confidence in, and now you've got a defense that knows how good they are. The linebackers are playing well. The defensive backs are playing well and giving up big plays, yes, but they're not giving up big scoring plays. That'll be interesting to see, at least from my perspective, the defensive backs against Spencer Rattler and those wide receivers. I think that could be the difference. And maybe you guys can kind of correct me if I'm wrong. The Oklahoma offensive line is not the Oklahoma offensive line of old, and I think that's going to be the other big X factor here is can Eli Howard, can some of these other guys, Tony Bradford, get some pressure? Because that was one thing that really did hurt them early in that game against West Virginia, was they weren't able to get pressure on Seth Dagan. He was able to sit in the pocket, find some guys, basically Winston Wright when he needed to, because half of the time he was a check down sometimes and he was able to get those big yards. But I think if they're able to, as Ryan said, get Spencer Rattler kind of off kilter, I think that's going to be a big, huge deal for Texas Tech. And I guess just, David, if you want to provide your final thoughts and maybe some things you're looking for when this game does happen this weekend at 2:30. Or pardon me, not 2:30. I'm thinking TCU, 7 p.m. Halloween night at Jones AT&T Stadium.
You kind of covered it there, Carlos. But, I mean, Matt Welch mentioned it. I think, you know, the process – you know, I hate the whole 76ers process thing. But yeah. – In this situation, the team needed to see that the process was working, and I think it works a lot better with young football minds than it does multimillionaire athletes. And they know that the process is working, and I think that helps going into a game against a team like Oklahoma. You mentioned, you know, where defenses are frustrating. Oklahoma's defense is certainly frustrating for anybody out there that cheers for Oklahoma. So if it's a tight ball game in this weekend at Jones AT&T Stadium, you got to feel good if you're a Red Raider fan, because that defense has certainly proven that it hadn't been up to the task of stopping other teams that much this year either. I mean, I don't think you look too much at that TCU game if you're cheering for Oklahoma and feel good about yourself. That TCU offense seems to be the only thing that's holding that group back right now. And I hate to say that with Sonny Cumbie as one of the offensive coordinators there, but they don't seem like I think Texas Tech's offense is certainly a notch better than that group.
Ryan, I guess from your perspective, I know David kind of pointed out some things, but from you, I know you seemed to be very stuck on Spencer Rattler. If you can get him pressured, that he may make some mistakes. Are there any other things you're going to be looking for when this game does happen on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think the defense, like Collier just said, I think that's still very much up in the air. Because the only game they've looked really good, I mean, the OU defense looked fairly good against Texas. The only game they've looked really good is against TCU, but we'll see how much, I mean, that offense is not a great one. So, something I do want to go back to, I'm not going to say this is going to be the factor in one, and I'm not going to say it necessarily affects Tech, but I do, just when you talk about where OU is not where they've been in recent years, I could see it being a difference when you're someone like Texas Tech that if you're getting burned week in and week out and you're just trying to look for it could be something name-wise when you look across and you see Kyler Murray or Jalen Hurts or CeeDee Lamb, et cetera, could be a little difference regardless of skill, just the mental side, which they talk about how big the mental side of sports really is in competition. When you look across and you see Marvin Mims versus CeeDee Lamb, even if, and I'm not saying it is, but even if the skill was similar, maybe you believe in yourself a little bit more and you haven't already lost the mental battle whenever you look over and you see a Kyler Murray, a Jalen Hurts, a CeeDee Lamb, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe you have a little bit better chance of a team against, like, okay, these guys are not named guys. Like, they're on our level. We can take it to this team. But I don't think it's going to come down to Spencer Rattler. I really don't. I don't think he's going to be the deciding factor of who wins this game. If OU's defense looks like it did against Kansas State and Iowa State, Tech has a chance of winning this game. If they look like they did against TCU, then Tech doesn't have much of a chance of winning this game. So I'm very curious to see Columbia, now that he has a full game out there on tape, how he and this offense looks against an Oklahoma defense that we still haven't really figured out. That's really what I want to see, is can the Texas Tech offense string a bunch of drives together and play even better than they did against West Virginia, get even more of a rhythm, or will they get on tape and maybe a team, now that they've actually seen him and this offense under him for an entire game, how will he react to that? Because as of now, we've only seen him in two relief appearances and his first game as the starter. As more time goes, like you see with anybody, defenses are going to scheme for you, not just the offense as a whole, and I'm curious to see how Columbia will react to that.
Once again, that's Ryan King, KLBK Sports Director, and of course, David Collier, KMAC Sports Director in Red Raider Nation. You can watch them on television. I believe Collier goes around 6:25, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe Ryan may go about 6:24 just because they overlap and they're nice like that. But
I'm second.
Oh, you there can you go.
Collier and then tune over.
Well, you can always watch him in the High School Sports Connection and all that stuff. So once again, appreciate you guys chatting a little bit about Texas Tech and their victory over West Virginia, that being 34-27 last weekend. This week, of course, they've got Oklahoma. They're hosting them for the Energy Game at 7 p.m. Halloween night, Jones AT&T Stadium. You can watch that game on Fox if you're not able to get out or if it's too cold. And, of course, if you have any updates or you need anything else on the Red Raiders sports or Texas Tech athletics in general, don't forget to go to lubbockonline.com. And you can pick up the newspaper each and every day as well to get that information. Once again, we appreciate you all listening to the Red Raider podcast. If you do subscribe, we appreciate it. But if not, don't forget to subscribe. And, of course, give us a 5-star rating, a comment. That helps us in the ratings and all that stuff. I'm Carlos Silva for David Collier and Ryan King. We'll talk to you next week.